WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I am positively thankful to our friends at MOI for giving me a standing desk. My back feels better. My body feels better. I'm actually standing doing our segments here. Our thanks, of course, to our friends at Fadley's as well. I'm wearing the shirt from Fadley's. We look to get back there. One of the last times we were there, this guy was in the room. He's all around town. Sometimes he's at the farmer's market. Sometimes he's on my timeline. Sometimes he's sending me texts from Western Maryland threatening me that I might be able to catch a rainbow trout one day. Dan Rodericks is our guest back along with former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller. The Baltimore Sun and saving the sun and giving me a little fly fishing game, Dan. I appreciate you. It's always great to have you on the program, brother.
All right. Nestor, thanks for asking me. Don, nice to see you too.
Good to see you, Dan. I said to you off the air, I want to say it publicly. I've been reading. It just always blows my mind that you've been at this for more than 40 years, because then I begin to do the math for myself as to how young where I was when I started reading you. And I said, I want you to talk a little bit, Dan, about the inspiration, because I'm going to say it publicly. I think your columns today are as powerful and diverse and very often inspirational as anything you were writing 30, 40 years. How do you keep, I mean, it's just great stuff, Dan. How do you keep that fire burning, and how do you get energized to keep doing it day after day?
Well, I've been doing it for so long, it feels somewhat like muscle memory, but it's not really that. It's brain memory. It's thinking about things constantly, all the time. And I read a lot. I read, you know, my own newspaper. I read magazines. I walk around town. When I leave you guys, I'm going down to Pigtown to take a tour around, see what's happening in Pigtown. So I keep it fresh. I love the city. The city is going through such a struggle now, and it's had such a perfect storm of problems over the last 5 years that I could say, enough. I'm going to retire and go fishing more and just forget all this stuff, or engage it and get into it. I can't walk away from it. This is my adopted hometown. I mean, Nestor, you guys grew up here. I've been here a long time, but it's still my adopted hometown. I feel strongly about Baltimore, and I want to see us turn a corner, you know, for once. And so that's what part of what keeps me in it. I also get kind of depressed about things, you know, when I click on BaltimoreSun.com and I see that 18 people have been shot over the weekend, 10 of them dead. And I say, when are we going to get out of this? How do we get out of this? So
Dan,
I can't walk away from it. I just can't walk away from it.
Well, I'm glad you can't walk away from it. Yeah. And boy, I said, we could chat for 2 hours, and hopefully we can have you sort of as a regular guest, because there's so many things to talk about. But you mentioned the violence, and I always hate to lead. I hate to lead with that, but you're right. Yeah. It's hard not to. But, you know, as we got ready to come on, I read this morning and then saw some things on cable news. This is now, after decades of declining violence in our cities, I mean, the violence across the country related to guns is out of control, and Nestor knows nothing makes me crazier. I mean, I give the stats all the time, 390 million guns, 330 million people, 4% of the world's population, 40% of the guns. We can go on and on and on. Yeah. And I know the president's going to speak again this afternoon on guns, and we nibble. We can't even, Dan, and react to this. We can't even nibble around the edges of stuff to me that's brain dead stuff, right? Background checks, red flag laws. I mean, I don't know that that's going to make a dramatic difference unless we really address guns, but we can't even do the simple stuff. I mean, talk about it, Dan. You're an observer. Make sense of it for me.
Well, I wrote a piece that was probably the most despondent piece I've written just in the last few weeks about how I don't think there's an answer for this, because the guns are so easily available. If you have a beef with somebody, if you have a temper tantrum, the chances are that person has access to a gun, and
or a drug habit or an alcohol problem or a violence, right. Like all of that.
And access, and you add access to a gun, and there's so many guns. I don't know that we have a way out of this, because politically we don't seem to be really have the will to do anything about it. People are getting armed. It's going the other way.
Well, it's going the other way politically. Like I saw that Lincoln Project picture going around of those goofs out in St. Louis, the lawyer who likes to see himself on TV with the flag.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was named the wrong name of the band. And I looked and he's got a full on rifle firearm. She's got some Saturday Night Spat. I don't know the names of these guns. I call them machine guns. My wife makes fun of me for that. Says you're wrong. I know they're not that far removed from. Well, they just kill people. That's all they do. They're set up to go. And that's their political ad. And I thought to myself, crime and misdemean her. Crime and misdemean her. Because I was trying to come up with the wrong name for the band. And I'm thinking to myself, they're running on a platform of showing you their guns, and people are voting for this in America. It's an incredible thing.
Oh boy. So that's why I stick around, is because I there's gotta be a way out of this. It's such a good city, a good community. I like living in Maryland. It's a great state. We've got to do something about that particular problem. And, you know, at some point here, we've got to say the whole region has got to say, we got to care about Baltimore. You can't turn away from it and say, I'm not going to go there anymore. I don't care about it anymore. That's where the Orioles are. That's where the Ravens are. That's still the central part of the state. You can't have a state with its largest city dysfunctional, where people don't want to visit it. We got to go the other way and try to save it. You know, I don't want to get started on the Orioles, but I was thinking,
Don and I have already been in three fights about it, and it's not even lunch.
I just want to say one thing, that I think it's really, people say you overstate the importance of professional sports and a franchise in a town, a city. I don't think so. I think it's really important that team get its act together, and that we have a reason for people to come downtown again to see the Orioles. They need to be good. They need to get good again. So that people will come back downtown. It's really important part of the city life. So that's all I want to say, Mr.
I couldn't agree more with that.
I want to jump in on this for a second here. Don Mohler's here and Dan Rogers is here. You're the second guest I've had this week from my childhood of the Evening Sun. I had Phil Jackman's daughter, Michelle, on. Phil's been ailing a bit, and it was Father's Day weekend. I know Don wanted to do some Father's Day stuff with you, and I saw you out with your boy fishing, where I hope we'll be doing. We'll get to that later on in the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. But coming to Baltimore, like I thought about Phil coming down here in the late 60s and covering the Orioles, and I mean, Michelle told the greatest story of peeing literally on Jim Palmer while on his shoulders when she was a 4-year-old girl in Miami. Oh, so hilarious story. So nonetheless, what brought you here and him here for like the better life, the better newspaper, the better reporting assignment? Tell me about the Baltimore you found here as an outsider. Was it 70 something something? When did you come here?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I got here in 76 and the governor was on trial. So I thought, hey, you know, this place has promise. The governor's on trial.
Well, 76, Baltimore's kind of a broken place in 76 for reputation, right?
No, Reggie Jackson was here for one season and left. But no.
Johnny U was gone.
The city, yeah. The Colts were on the way down. But no, actually,
you were good.
With Burt Jones, they were on the way up for a couple years.
Right, Burt Jones, Roger Carr.
Yeah, and then it all went away real fast in the early 80s.
But did you think this was your job going to the New York Times, or did you think maybe I'll live here forever?
Yeah, no, I thought I'd work for Baltimore, Baltimore Sun, work my way to the Washington Post and New York Times maybe. And then I realized that the Sun had opportunities. We had foreign bureaus, we had a Washington bureau, and I could work my way through the Baltimore Sun. But, you know, once Donald Corona crashed his airplane into Memorial Stadium, the governor was on trial, and I met William Donald Schaefer, the mayor, and I was in shock. And I thought, you know, this town has promise. Maybe I should stick around here. There's some cool stuff going on. It was kind of a kooky town. It was bigger population-wise. You know, we had like 100,000 more people back then. And Harbor Place hadn't opened. geez, that, you know, Samuel Smith Park, Don Mohler down there, that was wide open. Sure. And you could smell the McCormick spice. That was about it for an attraction at the Inner Harbor at the time. And the Science Center opened, and then the Harbor Place opened, and then the aquarium opened. And people said, the city's in renaissance, you know. But I found it to be also a very troubled city. And I had to explore it as a reporter. I explored the good and the bad. And I thought, this is a crucible of so many things in Baltimore City, so many pathologies and problems of urban life and white flight and racism. And there's all kinds of things to explore here, to study. And so I never ran out of material. I could write a book called Baltimore, Never a Dull Moment, probably, you know.
I don't think your columns would be as good as if we fixed the place. If the place was awesome and everything would be great, like, yeah, you might be retired by now, you know?
Yeah, if everything was awesome, Dan, yeah.
Dan, as a guy who loves the city and you're, I think you're spot on when you say we've got to get people, and Nestor and I have been on this mission for 3 years now to get people from the surrounding areas to get back down to the city. What was your reaction? I had a little giddy up in my step when I read in the Sun as I arose this morning that a private company and Kevin Durant, associated with Kevin Durant, is looking to put $150 million in Royal Farms right where it is, right in the center city. What was your reaction to that story?
Oh, that's pretty damn exciting. You know, that's not a bad location. People think, oh, it's not a bad location. It's just down the street from, or up the street from, Camden Yards, really. I mean, all that stuff, if you look at a map of the city, if you stand up here and look down on it, things are pretty well connected there. And, you know, through all this time, when people are complaining that, the arena was poorly built and there's a stage on one end and it's bad, and, you know, 14,000 people will go there for an event. You know, Reba McEntire, 14,000, wrestling. I went to a wrestling match. There was 17,000 people packed into this place. So people will go if you have. Bruce Springsteen was there. The Rolling Stones were there.
Jimmy Buffett. There. Nestor and I went down the list earlier.
I'm sitting on Pearl Jam tickets right now.
Pearl Jam's coming to the
Guns N' Roses is announced they're playing. So, like, Guns N' Roses is playing stadium. So, like, to your point, things come, no doubt about it. How can we make all of that better with hotel nights and a stay here and a weekend there and a dinner there and a tour here, like we do in Nashville or other places that are thriving in that way, right?
You know, they talked about other locations. You know, there's been plans for other locations. But I actually never thought that was a bad location. Just thought architecturally it could have been a better arena. So.
And I'm hoping that it actually jumpstarts some real discussions, Dan, about what a new Harbor Place could look like. And I think this kind of investment could do this. I gave Nestor, because I'm the oldest guy of the bunch here, I gave him a little history lesson. I said, as a young kid, my brother and I used to jump on a number 8, head down, watch the Clippers, watch the Bullets, watch Earl the Pearl, Gus Johnson, all the greats. And I said, I can remember being furious in the 1960s when we were, as always, chasing an NHL team, and the famous Dorothy L'Amour of the road movies was on the Baltimore Civic Center Commission, and they were this close to redoing the arena in a way that would have made it palatable to an NHL team. And she fought it and fought it and fought it because she didn't want to give up, as you just mentioned, the stage.
Oh, it was Dorothy L'Amour that did that?
Dorothy L'Amour. Look it up. Google Dorothy L'Amour, mid-1960s.
You know, she was a famous actress.
Road movies, right? Yeah.
Right. Bob Hope and Bing Crosby.
Right.
And she married some wealthy guy whose name I can't remember and lived Green Spring Valley, maybe.
And ended up on the Baltimore Civic Center Commission and cost us a renovated arena. So hopefully this is the real deal.
You know, Dan, George Taylor and Jimmy Jackson would always tell me as I ate the Death Dogs up there in the 80s that they stood with Clarence Campbell up in, at that time it was U-28, upper 28, which is now 328. And they stood up there and they looked down and they realized they couldn't see the goal. For hockey, and they realize that's probably a problem for a third of the building. You know,
probably not a good thing. You know, with Dan Rogers.
I forget. It's probably been. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I think it was. It's probably been 4 years ago now, maybe 5 years ago. They had an NHL game there.
Yes, the Caps, and the ice melted.
And the ice melted.
You know, Leonza saw me. I swear to God, Leonza saw me 2 days later at the Capitals convention down at the National Harbor, where we're going to have a crab cake on the tour. And he came up to me, and he was like signing autographs for fans, and he's got his suit on. And it's the Caps convention. And he's son, he sees me. He's like, that ice of yours almost got Ovechkin killed. And he was like, and he looked at me and I'm like, Ted, I didn't leave the door open.
Wasn't my ice, Ted.
And then they never came back because like Ovechkin almost broke his ankle, like literally.
Oh, yeah, I believe it. Yeah, it's pretty bad. It was pretty bad. Yeah.
Hey, Dan, we're coming off as we do this. We're coming off Father's Day, and I joked with you off the air. I said over the years, there is no doubt that I, along with many of your readers, we know mom. We know the one and only Rose Popolo. I can smell her lasagna. I can taste her meatballs. You know, we know Rose Popolo. I don't feel as if I know your dad as well. And you said you wrote a book about him. And I said, as people know, they've read me, I have a strained relationship with my dad. Who left when I was 3 years old. Tell us a little bit. We know Mrs. Popolo. Tell us a little bit about Mr. Rodericks.
Well, when I say I wrote a book about him, my book that came out a couple of years ago called Father's Day Creek, I used that opportunity to reflect on my life with my father, which was a difficult boyhood with him. He was an immigrant from Madeira Island, which is an island of Portugal. It's off the coast of Morocco, actually. It's a beautiful place, a tropical island with a volcanic island that's just so gorgeous. A lot of Americans don't know about Madeira Island. A lot of Europeans go there for vacation. And I went there to visit after my father died. He died in 1986. And a few years later, I went and visited. I wish I had gone there, taken him back there. It was paradise. I mean, it was paradise. And I wonder, you know, why did they leave? Why did his parents take him to the United States? Well, they were pretty poor. They settled in Massachusetts. His father died. My father's birth name was Rodriguez. The Portuguese pronounce Rodriguez, R-O-D-R-I-G-U-E-S. Wherever you see a Z in Spanish, Gomez is Gomes in Portuguese. Sanchez would be Sanchez in Portuguese. Rodriguez would be Rodriguez. So my father came here as Jose Rodriguez, and they landed in this waspy town where, you know, in Massachusetts, where a lot of the people who lived there could trace ancestry back to the Mayflower, literally. And there were the immigrants in the town were Irish, Italian, Portuguese. And I think when my father went to school, they changed his name to something easier to write, Rodericks, rather than Rodriguez, because his parents didn't speak English, of course. So anyway, they settled there, and his father was a foundry man. He worked in a cast iron foundry. He died when my father was 14. Joe Rodericks went to the eighth grade, dropped out of school to support his mother. He was a hardworking guy his whole life, worked in the foundry like his father did. Got to the point in the late 1940s, early 50s, where he and a couple of stepbrothers and some friends bought their own gray iron foundry where they made castings and machine parts and things for many years. That was in northern Rhode Island. We lived in southeastern Massachusetts, or the South Shore, as it's called. South Shore, yeah. Bridgewater, East Bridgewater. That's where I grew up. Grew up in a small town, and my father was a tough guy. I think he was always carrying around some sort of hole in his soul because his father had died when he was 14, and he had to go to work. He missed out on things. You know, my father was a smart guy. I think I write this in a book that I think he had some resentment of his own sons who were able to finish high school and go to college. And I think I think there was a little bit of resentment or jealousy of his own children that he wasn't able to have that kind of life.
It's interesting you say that because my dad loved that I worked at the paper. He died with clips I was a kid working with you, but my dad never, like, if he were alive today, he'd say, you never got your hands dirty, dude. You know what I mean? Or in the way someone who served in the military would say, you didn't serve, right. You know, like there would be an expectation that my dad lived to 102. He would said, you know, at some point, you know, you should have a shovel. You should, because like getting your hands dirty, my dad stood in soup lines. So there is a judgment part of, your son grew up, Mr. Rogers, your son told stories to the people of Baltimore for a generation.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it is
I think he was proud of me. I think he was proud of I have two brothers and a sister. I think he was proud of us, but I think there was a little bit of that resentment. So when I wrote this memoir, I examined that a little bit. And here's a great story. My oldest brother, Joe, is a scientist. He's an accomplished scientist. He's much older than me, too. He's 16 years older than me. It's almost like we had two different families. But he went to in 1950s, during the space race, when science exploded, got to be a big thing, he went to MIT, got a bachelor's degree from Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And when my father went to pick him up from school after graduation, clean out his dormitory and drive him back home, he asked him to come work in the foundry. He said, well, you've gone off, got your college education now. Now we need you to come work in the foundry. And my brother Joe had much different plans. You know, he was a chemist and he's had a whole career as a scientist. He's written 6 books. And, you know, but that was the mentality then. Okay, that's good. You got your college education. Now, don't get above your raisin. Come back home. And
that's one of the issues in America, right? From the farm, we're going to send you to the city to get educated.
Yeah.
You ain't coming back to the farm, right?
Yeah.
You know, when you two talk about that, it's so interesting. It takes me back as a young counselor at Lansdowne High School. And I can remember in Lansdowne, really working class area of Baltimore County, hasn't changed much in the 40 or so years since I was there as a counselor. But I can remember the young kids, and I'm friends with a lot of them today. They're no longer kids. they're some of them old enough actually to retire. But they would struggle with what both of you are alluding to, the idea that they were about to go to college. And what I sensed in talking to their moms and dads, Nestor, was not so much a resentment. They were proud, but there was also, I'll play a little Dr. Phil, almost an angst over whether my son or daughter is about to get to a place that I'm not really familiar with. I don't know that college world. And will that change my son or daughter in a way that they're no longer comfortable with me? It was sort of this uneasiness about what it means for our family dynamic. You know, it was more than resentment. It was almost an apprehension of, am I losing them in a way that they'll be embarrassed by me? And of course, the kids were saying, there's no way I'd ever be embarrassed by you, mom and dad. You're hard. But mom and dad thought, I wonder if they're going to be embarrassed to have us around their quote unquote new friends.
That's a very interesting dynamic. And I think it applies in my case a little bit too, but I've mostly have reflected on the fact that my father seemed like he had missed out. You know, he got cheated a bit. And there's other people who lost parents early in life. Like you said, your father was gone early and might feel that way. They missed out on things. And I don't know what it was. He was an angry guy. And we had a lot of tough times when I was a teenager. Even later on, when I was in my 30s, we were still going at it. And so I examined all that in my book. The best times I ever had with my father was when we went fishing. And we just didn't do that enough. I wish we had done that enough because, you know, you get up early in the morning with your father in Massachusetts. We were going to Plymouth, Massachusetts to go deep sea fishing, 2 hours out of Plymouth, way out where you saw whales and the Russian fishing trawlers and Japanese fishing trawlers. You get up early in the morning and go to a diner, just you and your dad in a diner full of men going to work. you're reading the Boston Record American, the Boston Herald about what the Red Sox did last night. I grew up with all that, and the smell of bacon and home fries and waitresses in aquamarine uniforms. Anyway, and then you go out on a boat, spend the day with him out on a boat fishing for cod and haddock. And those are the best times. I just wish I had more of those opportunities. It's a hardworking guy, came home and ate dinner and went to sleep and had a lot of anger about things. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting when you talk, and Nestor, you're about to experience it because you're going up to watch the Springsteen show on Broadway. I finished recently, Dan, people who've listened, I had a long trip down to get my granddaughter and bring her back from college. So I was able to listen to the entire podcast series of Bruce and the president, and Obama, just talking about life. And both of them had very challenging experiences with their dads. Very, very challenging.
Yeah.
And Bruce talked about his dad would just disappear for days at a time. And his dad being, you used the term angry, his dad being angry on many days, and talks about the impact. And it's interesting, right? Dad, I wrote recently, dads come in all shapes and sizes. And we all have different experiences with our dads, and they all become part of who we are, don't they, Dan?
Well, yeah, but there's parts of my father that I'm glad that's not part of me. So that I felt like in one generation I was able to, like my relationship with my son, I think, is so much better. And he's a much better kid than I was.
That makes you a better parent, Dan. Take all the credit, brother. Right, Dan Rogers is here for the Baltimore Sun. Of course, legendary columnist, my one-time colleague and longtime friend, has promised to fish with me, fly fish. We have gone fishing one time together. Don, do you know this? The last time I fished, the only time I fished as an adult, other than I went deep sea fishing in Australia, but the only time I've ever gone fishing locally with a person is Dan Rodericks. He took me to Pretty Boy. Yeah. We pushed in a boat. We didn't catch anything, but it was a good day.
No, we weren't in a boat.
No, we weren't in a boat. No, there was Marlo. Maybe it was Marlo who took me fishing in a boat.
I've only been
twice in my life.
Well, I took you to the Gunpowder River, and it had rained like hell the night before. And I said, you know, the river's going to be up. It's going to be hard to fish. But you wanted to try it, so we tried it anyway. We didn't catch anything. We got wet.
I mixed it up with Marlo, who took me to Pretty Boy 25 years ago.
Dan, here's my question. Here's my question for you. I love this fly fishing with Nestor. I cannot wait to see this. Now, I don't know anything about fly fishing. I have some friends who love it the way you do. My impression fly fishing is it's incredibly peaceful and quiet, and you're communing with nature when you're standing out there in the high boots and just really soaking in what it's all about. It is my sense is that there shouldn't be a lot of talking while one is fly fishing, or is there a code of fly fishing? Because I'm trying to imagine Nestor fly fishing.
Well, no, there isn't a lot of talking, but when there's instruction, when you have to like teach somebody, you have to articulate what they're doing wrong or what they're doing correctly or what they should be doing. So there will be some of that with Nestor. And I think he's a good listener. I think he can focus at times on, and this does require a lot of concentration. So, I mean, it's like hitting a baseball. Oh yeah, that's my son Nick. Just the other day, Father's Day.
See, Dan sent this over to me on text to show me, and nobody's talking, and it's cool. I can shut up. I'm fine, man. I'll chew some gum. It'll be fine. Put some music on. But I do want to hear all this. But Dan, I was out in Montana 3 years ago, and this appealed to me. I went out there with Mike Marlowe, who I know you know, who lived out there. It was too cold to like really fish, but I went in the summer, and this is what I saw. I saw people doing this incredible thing with waders in the water, cars up. It looked like fun, much more fun than hitting a golf ball or sitting in an Oriole game with Moeller or any, you know, and it's something different for me. So the Crab Cake Tour, you would ask me about it. And I put this thing together to do 30 crab cakes in 30 days for a lot of the reasons you're talking about that I think on the Eastern Shore and I think in Western Maryland, they think of Baltimore as like Beirut and a place that's not America, not theirs, even though they're paying taxes for it and we should make Baltimore better. but I want to have fun and I want to experience things I've never done. Lefty Cray always invited me fishing. You've been inviting me fishing. The late great Mike Flanagan invited me fishing. My aunt, my late great aunt Clara, used to always want to fish with me. And I don't know, I'm old enough now that if it's going to be fishing or golfing or tennis, my knees are bad. I think I want to try this fishing thing and I want to try the fly fishing thing. So can you give me what I'm going to expect? Because I'm going to be on like day 27 or 28 of eating crab cakes. I don't know if we're going to get a crab cake out there. My friends at Wise Market is going to make sure we have Maryland crab meat out in Frostburg. They've told me this. So I will at least be able to like have a camp and a glamp and a yurt. That if we don't catch anything, we'll at least be able to make proper. And I'll let you pick the recipe. We'll do a Dan Roderick special crab cake. But I want to fish. So give me the, like, what's a perfect day for you and me and your son if I bring Dennis Colatsos, who's fishes a ton, he's never fly fish. And I'm going to bring Eric Sauer, who's a survivor of a bone marrow transplant. He's the founder of There Goes My Hero. He loves to fly fish. That's his thing. So a couple of you know what you're doing, a couple of us. And then there's me. And I'll just be like, clay for you.
Well, I always sell it to people as an active form of fishing. When you go on a boat, you're standing on a boat trolling maybe, and you're waiting for the boat to catch the fish. Basically the lines are out, you drink a beer, and you, I think that's boring. I haven't done that.
That's
in years.
The Mike Moeller, you're describing the Mike Moeller experience out there for the rockfish.
Okay, your brother is different though. He casts his own line, you know, he reels it in. He's throwing lures out. He's not trolling, letting the boat do all the work. And he's chasing birds. I like fishing with Mike because I can use a fly rod. He can use a spinning rod. And we're chasing, looking to see where the birds are feeding on bait fish in the bay. And then we chase them. That's a lot more active type of fishing than what I'm talking about. Sitting on a bucket with a worm on a hook and waiting for a fish to come by is boring.
You don't like to fish that way. See, no, that's very Tom Sawyer, and that's very when I was a kid, we go to a lake,
we
catch a sunfish, and you know, you throw it out, and you know, throw it out, your line gets caught, and your bobbers, and the weight, like, that's what my experience was of fishing for
the
most part. It's probably why I don't do it. It's why I chase girls and baseball and rock stars, things I was more interested in.
So I stopped fishing for about 10 years because I was bored with all that, and then I picked up fly fishing. I tried it, and what I realized was, well, this is really like being connected to nature. You're standing in the environment of the fish. You have to actually get in a stream to make in order to cast the line to get your fly in front of a trout. I mostly do trout fishing. And I do some saltwater fishing, but mostly trout fishing. And the flies, the reason we're using flies is because trout eat natural flies, bugs that hatch in the river and try to fly away before the trout eat them. So you're actually imitating the natural food of the trout. You're trying to imitate the natural drift of a bug on the surface so that it looks like something a trout wants to eat. Trout is pretty smart. They're not going to go for something that's stupid looking. They want to go for something that looks like the natural food that they eat. Plus, you're in the environment of the trout. You're in the water. You're in cold water because trout can only live in cold water. You're in a place with a canopy, usually with trees, and it's cool. Even on a hot summer day, your upper body might be warm, but your feet are freezing. Not freezing, but it's cool. There's cool mist coming off the river.
You don't need a gun.
You don't, and we practice catch and release. I rarely ever keep trout anymore because if we all kept the trout that we caught I'm talking about wild trout, they'd soon all be gone. People would just, they'd clean out the rivers. You can go to a river where they stock fish. The state stocks lots of trout every year. You can take those. Those are separate rivers. I go to rivers where there are wild trout. So in Western Maryland, we'd go to the Savage River. We could go to the North Branch of the Potomac River, which is absolutely gorgeous and full of wild trout, or trout that have been stocked and are stream bred. In other words, they put the trout in. You can't keep them. They reproduce. They start reproducing.
So ethically, if we go out and fish and I catch a fish, ethically, you want me to get rid of it. We're not going to bring it back and like cook it at the camp at the yurt, right?
Probably
so
not.
I'm dreaming of this Daniel Boone experience with you, Dan. It's one time in life we're going to do this. I've talked you into it. We're driving 3 hours. We're even going to go to the little circle that's pissed you off in Western Maryland. I'm just pissed off because of Red Line.
You know about this. The Hogan Circle, Larry Hogan.
I read your writing. What the hell do you think I am? You just think I'm a guy down the street that doesn't read your work?
The Hogan Circle.
Larry Hogan Circle. Or Larry Hogan's boondoggle.
What I'm saying is I'm trying to Bourdain this thing. You're my Anthony Bourdain of this thing. Okay. I want to get a yurt. I want a glamp. I want to do it all. The next day, my wife's taking me ziplining at this monkey thing out in Deep Creek.
The zip crack. So you want to eat poached trout. Is that it? You want me to poach them out of the river?
I want to know the rules, man. I don't want to be the guy. Like, I'll give you an example. This is a golf thing. And I don't know if this is right or wrong, but I'm telling you what happened, all right? Because I'm not a golfer. This is true, Don. Wasn't my crazy ass tournament.
I'm ready to give you a ruling.
Hold on. I'm out on a golf course with a guy, and the guy was kind of a jerk, and I spent the whole day with this guy, and it was like, I don't like golf. This is 20 years ago. And he had to go to the bathroom. He just walked to the side, just whipped, peed on the side of the golf course. And I'm like, dude, that feels Caddyshack. That doesn't feel Jack Nicklaus. You know what I mean? That doesn't feel Green Spring. That feels Dundalk. That feels Rocky Point. Like, no, I mean, I'm not doing that because that doesn't feel like – that feels like you guys are telling me about the pool on the third floor at Dundalk High, like you're putting me up to doing something I shouldn't do. I still don't know if it's right or wrong because I haven't golfed with anybody. But I don't, like, want to break any forest rules by taking trips. So you got to tell me what – you know, I want to be with the people.
So if you go in the springtime, like – earlier, like April, May, June, March, the state stocks fish during that time. You can take up to 5 a day if you can catch them.
Okay.
But as we get into the summer, we'll be there in August, I think you said?
Late August, yes.
Well, yeah, it's probably not a good time to – that probably won't happen. We're going to have some other provisions.
So we're not going to catch a fish?
You'll have to take some fish with you.
We're not going to catch a fish.
We'll have to stop – no, we'll catch wild rainbows and brown trout, but we're going to have to release them. We're going to have to return them.
Oh, I'm fine with that. I just want to know what to expect. This is a crab cake tour. This isn't a poach fish and eat them illegally with Dan Roderick's on the internet. No,
I don't want to see the headline. Roderick's and Aparicio arrested by DNR.
Yeah, DNR.
My wife watches those shows from New Hampshire where they poach deer and stuff, and they all have your accent. And they say, Dan Roderick's is here. We're talking about the Maryland crab cake tour. We're hoping to do this and fly fishing and Lefty Cray and your book and all that. We've kind of covered almost everything here, Don, but I know you have a long list.
Just one before, and I know we're coming up against it. Before we let Dan go, we're coming off a week, Dan, and your Twitter feed is one of my favorite follows. We're coming off a week where 50 United States senators voted to prevent discussing voting rights legislation, not passing voter rights legislation. 50 Republican United States senators said, we don't even want to talk about it. Make sense of this for me, Dan, and what is happening in the United States Senate?
Republicans are running out of people. The party is getting smaller. Even though you saw Trump with, 70 million votes or something like that. But the party is actually losing ground. They're not recruiting new people. It's still mainly a white party. And they're finding that they need, in order to win elections, they need to put a stop to or slow down the number of brown, black, and progressives who are voting, progressive whites who are voting for Democrats. I mean, the magic formula for Democrats' victory is, blacks, browns, and progressive whites. That mathematically works for them. The Republican Party has bought into white resentment of this, that's what Trump did. That's why they are hoping that'll continue to work for them. But the demographics are moving against them. So you have, I forget the count now, it's 250 pieces of legislation in various state legislatures that are run by Republicans that can all be seen in some way as restricting the vote. When we just had this very robust election in 2020, when people were able to go at different hours. There were drive-throughs. There were boxes where you could vote on the street. And no election fraud that anybody's been able to document. And yet the Republicans and state legislatures are out to do what they can to try to arrest this, to slow it down. And they're making progress because they control so many state legislatures. I think 36 of them, maybe more now.
But Dan, there was a fascinating. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Just want to say the U.S. Senate is going right along with that. They're all on the same page, these guys. I don't think
the founders thought that they would be this hot on keeping their own jobs, right?
It's fascinating. And one of the things that the founders, I don't think, anticipated, and someone suggested to me, and I am going to do this, believe it or not, it's been probably since I was in college that I read the Federalist Papers, but somebody suggested that I go back and read Federalist Paper 22, in which Hamilton talks about the importance of majority rule versus supermajority. And I actually plan to go back and read Federalist Paper 22, but there was a statistic.
Excuse me, Don, you won't find the filibuster in there.
No, I know. No, you won't. I keep saying to my wife, it's a Senate rule. But listen to this little stat, guys. The 50 Democratic senators in the United States Senate represent 43 million more Americans than the 50 Republican senators. Think about that. 43 million more Americans. Now, what I find interesting about all this, though, Dan, it seems to me, and we won't know for months, that perhaps the Democrats are suddenly beginning to wake up and learn how to fight a little bit. And as somebody said, not keep bringing a knife to a gunfight. I mean, we keep getting smacked around and we just say, give me more, sir. Give me more, sir. And it looks like if they start listening to Stacey Abrams, maybe they can actually begin to come up with a strategy that works, because I thought, and it didn't get nearly the coverage, Dan, I'm curious to your reaction, that I thought it should have. When Stacey Abrams last week, when Manchin put out his, I can live with this, and it included voter ID, which is very, very popular among the American voter, including Democrats. Over 60% of the Democrats favor voter ID. And Stacey Abrams really threw the Republicans a curveball because she said, I can live with that. They didn't know what to do, Dan. They didn't know what to do.
Yeah. When you take this big bill on voting rights apart and look at it in pieces, that's why Manchin can do what he's doing, because he can present it in pieces and it's more palatable. He can vote for it. And that particular thing, you're right, that should have made actually more news. And I think it will this week. It looks to me like it's that story is getting some traction about voter ID. The numbers just aren't there. Like we were talking about the representation in the Senate of the Republicans versus the Democrats. And demographically speaking, the numbers aren't there. Democrats need to kick some ass. I mean, they need to get the Senate back.
You're singing my song.
They're going to have and if you're not going to do away with the filibuster, you got to get 60 senators or 57 senators or 58 senators and then do away with the filibuster. The reason Biden, his approval rating was so good until like last week, I guess it took a hit, but his projects, the American Jobs Act and now infrastructure, way over, 65, 70% approval of that. And that's what Republicans fear. Look how the ACA has taken hold now. The Obamacare has passed the test of the Supreme Court three times now, 31 million people are on it. And Republicans have had to shut up because they can't, their own constituents have it. They can't argue against it anymore. They've lost that battle. This will happen to other things too if Democrats can just pull it off. I mean, people thought, I remember thinking in 2010 when the ACA passed without a single Republican vote, people thought it wouldn't last because it had no bipartisan support, but it has lasted. It has turned out to be popular. And we have, like I said, 31 million people who didn't have insurance 10 years ago have health insurance now. Hey, Nestor, I need to ask Nestor a question. I made a list of these little pieces of paper of things that places that you wanted to visit in Maryland. Did you want these?
Oh my God! See, I mean, Doncic. I was going to ask you. Well, I was even going to take this even further politically because you were going right and left, and I'm like, we got like a gubernatorial thing going on here. We're like a purple state. All right, Maryland tour crab cake. So here's the deal.
Yeah,
I've got my list and I've got my map. Talk to me. Okay. Go for it.
All right, I'll do it real quick. You got starting on the east and the north in Cecil County. You have to go to Chesapeake City on the C&D Canal, the Chesapeake and Delaware Canal, and go to Schaefer's Canal House Restaurant on Route 213 in the town of Chesapeake City. If you've never been there, it's a quaint little place.
He's giving me a complete dissertation. This is going to be, man, I'm taking notes. I got my pen out. Go ahead, Dan.
This is what you wanted.
It's not like I'm taping. I do want every bit of this. Go ahead.
All right. That's pretty much the only thing I have here in the east. So we go west.
This is based on a crab. This is a place to get a crab cake. Is that what the criteria is, or a place to visit?
No, you want to get a crab cake there.
Fair enough. You give me crab cake places. Go ahead. Okay.
Yeah. Then we're going to go out west to Washington County.
Okay.
To the town you've never heard of, Knoxville. We actually have a Knoxville, Maryland. And there's you like this, Frog Eye Farm.
He's salivating, Dan. He's salivating.
Frog Eye Farm, and you pick blueberries.
Oh, we're picking blueberries.
You're picking blueberries.
Yeah, I talked to my wife about picking blueberries an hour ago because somebody in Bel Air, $4 a pound. Go ahead. Keep going.
Right. All right. So we keep going west till we get to the town of Grantsville, Maryland in Garrett County.
Grantsville, Maryland. Right. Go ahead. Garrett.
And there you can see the $61.5 million Larry Hogan roundabouts.
Okay.
Where they took a road from nowhere through nowhere to nowhere and made it like a big highway out of it and a bridge
much
and everything.
Much more important than the red line, Dan.
Yeah. So pull open my pants and pee there, never mind. Just that's different than the golf course. All right.
Beats the red line. Beats moving people around the city and the economic
development. You pee somewhere and there's nobody there because there's nobody there. Does anybody know? I don't know. We'll find out, but go ahead.
But that was money from the red line that went out there.
Yes.
So you'll be able to see that and you'll say, what is this? What is this? Okay. So that's Grantsville. And then you want to go further west to the town of Oakland, Maryland, near Deep Creek Lake or past Deep Creek Lake. And you want to go to the Moon Shadow restaurant in what's actually near Deep Creek.
Okay, Moonshadow.
We're not in Oakland yet. Near Deep Creek is a Moonshadow restaurant that has live music and none of the flatware matches, none of the dishes or the glasses match.
A little cheek to cheek with my wife. I like it. Good. All right.
Yeah, yeah.
I hear Glory Days by Springsteen on the jukebox there. That's what I'm thinking.
Well, they have live music.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
good.
If you like banjo picking and grinning, you'll get some of that. Anyway, you might want to stay. You might want to stay at a place called Blue Moon Rising. So this is Moon Shadow Cafe, and then Blue Moon Rising is tiny house cabins. These are like little houses, tiny houses.
Tiny house. I always wanted to stay in a tiny house.
Well, you want to stay in it. It's called Blue Moon Rising. It's right near Deep Creek Lake, and it looks like the Hobbit lives there or something. And there's all these little houses that are made from parts of other houses from Baltimore and Frederick and all at Hagerstown. And they're really funky and neat. And you can stay in that.
Well, I'm going to take that B&O Railroad, the Frostburg Flyer out there. That's on my list. That's a big bucket list thing for me to get a meal on the train. Yeah. So that's one of my things.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
And then there's a really good brew pub near Deep Creek Lake called Mountain State Brewery. Might want to make a note of that.
Mountain State Brewery. You're making me thirsty. Yes.
Their pizza, wood stove pizza is really good. Wood oven pizza. I don't know about crab cake there, though.
Everybody's told me. I had Steve Whiteman from Kicks on. He said to me, you're getting a crab cake in Hagerstown? You're not going to find a crab cake in Hagerstown.
Oh, that's not true. That's not true. You find some of the best crab cakes further away from Baltimore. You do. I find I found
why did we talk about all this other stuff with you? I mean, no offense to your father or any of the other stories we told.
It's all right.
I mean, this is a travelogue. I'm telling you, Nestor, you could put this on the Maryland tourism
I'm going to have
site.
To get a coffee with Dan, like off the air, and do this the right way. Well, wait, do you have other places? You have more?
Yeah, I just want to mention one other thing. In the town of Oakland, in the summertime, if you luck out, you'll get there when the American Legion and the VFW have competing chicken barbecues.
Woo! Hold on, and now we're talking. Okay,
yeah,
hold
if you
on.
Like the, you know, the slow cooked chicken barbecue. Okay, you know, the guys get up early and start a fire, and they cook the chicken all day, and you get coleslaw and corn and a biscuit with it or something. You know,
probably Budweiser too, if I'm guessing. But okay, all right.
I think there's kind of a rivalry between the American Legion and the VFW on their chicken barbecue. So you might because they're sometimes on the same weekend, and I think. They must have a thing going because you wouldn't plan this the same weekend as the, you know, as the
it's a
as
little
the
Bobby
other.
Flay thing they do out there, like a barbecue off.
It's beat Bobby Flay there.
Mueller, when you bring real journalists on, this is what you get.
Yeah.
I'm dead serious. This has to go on the Maryland tourism site. I mean, it's
all right. Yeah. So Dan, haven't you bragged about the crab cake at the Swallow at the Hollow? Wasn't that you that bragged about that?
Yes. Okay, let me tell you. That's surprising.
It was on the Food Network.
You know, that's my neighborhood.
I need to know those. I'm going to, in the fall, we're going to go over and do one over there when I get back. All right.
You know what, Dan? You got to hook him up with Baseball Billy Jones at the Swallow. Now, that would be that would be educated. Right. You get Baseball Billy and Nestor at the Swallow.
I want a round table. Absolutely. It'd be great. Dan, you know, I love you. If you have any more hints, I mean, we do text. You did send me that beautiful video of you and your son, Nick, on Father's Day, catching rainbow trout, made me jelly. I showed it to my wife. I made her watch it and said, look, honey, if you go west on the trip, she's not going to do every part of the trip. You know, she wants to do some parts of it, the kangaroos and the goat yoga, anything that's, you saw her paddleboard through the city the other day, right? My wife went out on a paddle board on the Inner Harbor and paddled to the Domino's sugar and came back.
Did you have a video of that on somewhere?
Oh, my God. It's all over the internet. Yeah, people.
It's great.
Oh,
it's
incredible. Absolutely. I'll
make sure I check it out. I will.
Oh, it's incredible.
No. I mean, it's astonishing. I got up. They did it. My wife signed up. It was the summer solstice at 5 o'clock in the morning. Here, I'll pull the pictures up for you, Dan, and that way the audience can have shared them all week here. So this is my wife and her crew in front of the Domino's sugar, right?
Oh,
my
wife, right?
My wife right here in the front.
Yeah, you have to frame these.
And this is her, you know, on her way back. I was standing down by the Ritz-Carlton, and this is by the Rusty Scupper, and there she is.
That's great.
So, yes, very much so. People do that, and that's called Flo-Yo. My friend Jesse Benson does that. So if you're talented, you can do that. Dan, I love you. We got to go. Time's up.
All right. Me too. I got to go to Pigtown.
Have fun.
All right, you guys. Thank you very
Brandon
much.
Brandon Scott
having
says there's a great pizza place in Holland's Market. Trying to think of the name of it, but it's really good. So check it out.
All right.
There you go. He's Dan Rogers. He's Don Mueller. He was the Baltimore County executive. Dan was a mentor to me who's going to take me fishing at the Evening Sun, low these many years ago. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive and delicious crab cakes and cold beer and fishing.